Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. We're back to talk about another thrilling Spurs match and combat the sense of ennui that seems to be pervading Spurs fandom, because we all know that we are everyone's shining light of optimism when it comes to Tottenham Hotspur. But before that, don't forget to leave us a five-star review on iTunes or Spotify, because you should be upbeat about something. And you can also follow us on Twitter at WDR Podcast. That's WDR as in Wheeler Dealer Radio. This week, coming to us straight from Miami, he is committed to improving Spurs results and will be suing Ange to make him start substituting players before halftime. It is Brian Ashlock. Brian, how's the lawsuit progressing?
It's slow. Really, the issue is overcoming standing. I don't really know how we're going to be allowed to sue Ange Postecoglou over decisions that he's making as a football manager. But you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And you know, as someone who's in Florida, you know, we can make up lawsuits about just about anything, and the courts down here will let me win. So it's just a matter of, can I get Ange Postecoglou into a Florida courtroom?
You should go outside and consult the prime minister. You know, maybe have your MP who lives between you, you know, call him about it. I think that could help.
I think it could definitely. I mean, there's nothing that it would hurt, obviously.
And next up, coming to us from the treacherous political jungle of Brooklyn, where I can only assume he is helping candidates navigate what to put on their letterboxed account, it's Michael Caley. Michael, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's been a day. It is a relief to talk about Tottenham Hotspur Football Club.
As opposed to the rough and tumble politics of Brooklyn, New York.
The demands they make of me are so simple.
Bad set pieces versus crime.
Man, I'm annoyed the set pieces are bad. I don't know. That can't hurt me.
So, yeah, let's talk about where Spurs are right now. Michael, I'm interested to hear what you think about sort of where Spurs are at right now, because I think you engage more so than the rest of us, certainly, with the broader sort of football conversation, at least on social media, if not in podcast form. But, you know, because I certainly, as I said in our opening, which I rehearsed like five times because I can't talk tonight, you know, there is a sense of frustration among Spurs fans that I find at least a little puzzling, given where we were a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I mean, coming out of a tough draw like this, like, how are you feeling about the state of the club right now?
Yeah, so I mean, like, you know, Spurs didn't play well against West Ham. You know, there were parts of the game that they played well in. There were aspects that were good, but the overall performance didn't add up. And like, that was not a good performance. And they got a draw away to West Ham, which is like not great. But I don't know, man. Like, I was here at the beginning of the season when, like, they sold Harry Kane and they signed Brendan Johnson, and we had Ange and we have the project, and like the exciting thing was like, look, this is about 2025, 2026, 2027. That's where this is supposed to get somewhere. The team chose to go into the season with only two center backs, because it would allow them to have the squad they wanted, allow them to move a little bit of money, and allow them to get there, because this wasn't the season they were committing to. And now here we are, disappointed that Spurs didn't take the opportunity to move into fourth, when there's a very good chance that fifth got Champions League anyway. Like, this is so... we are ahead of schedule by any reasonable accounting that anyone would have put together earlier. Like, I don't know what there is to be, like, sad about if you baseline it to anything other than, you know, we demand fourth place, we demand Champions League because we're close to it. And, like, sure, it would be disappointing if this team ends up in the Europa League. But, like, they have played fifth-ish place football, maybe sixth, you know? Like, but, you know, the kind of football where a few things go right and Son and Vicario have really good seasons finishing and saving shots, and then you're in fourth or fifth. Like, that's the season they've had. That's a good season based on where we are. The team is supposed to be, like, building on this over the next several summers. They're supposed to be improving the talent, and we can talk about where that talent needs to be improved. Obvious that talent needs to be improved. Everyone knew last summer that we got through without a director of football that talent would need to be improved. Like, I don't know what, like, you're mad about in that context.
And it's funny you say that in a macro context, because I think you're right, and I think those are all well taken. But in a micro context, if you told me at the beginning of the season, hey, Greg, Tottenham is going to have, you know, a game where they could move into an advantageous position in the table against away to West Ham in the rain, how do you think that's going to go? Frustrating draw is probably going to be my highest percentage answer, which doesn't mean it was any more fun to watch. But, you know, again, very predictable result. Brian, how do you feel looking at this team after that draw against West Ham?
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the same page as Michael, honestly. You know, I think the early part of the season really sort of set the expectations significantly higher than they needed to be. And like, while the early part of the season was great because it meant we banked a lot of points. And so ultimately when we did run into an injury crisis, because, you know, it turns out having only two center backs isn't the greatest idea in the world. It changed where we thought this team could go. It went from like, okay, this is a project, this is a rebuild, to like, holy shit, we're good. Maybe we should win the league, or maybe we should win a trophy. And like, we were guilty of that on this podcast, even though I think we all tried to at least keep the expectations level. But like, we all slipped into that where it was like, we're going to win the league now. And, you know, now where we've slightly come back to earth and, you know, we're seeing growing pains, we're seeing, you know, the difficulties that come with implementing an entirely new tactical system, a way of playing football that's such a departure from the previous, you know, two managers, that, you know, my expectations haven't changed, but like, I understand the frustration and where it comes from, but like, I feel exactly like Michael said, totally fine, because we're not talking about this season, we're talking about next season. And, you know, you're getting guys like Werner, like Saar, like Udogi, Poro, Van de Ven, like Vicario, you're getting them all acclimated to this league, you're getting them all used to playing with each other, playing a certain style, and it's largely working. So, I mean, you know, Michael touched on, you know, that, you know, the talent is there, but the talent still needs to be improved on. And I mean, that's kind of the big what if for this team and this club. I mean, it's kind of always been the big what if, like, you know, and Ange has actually talked about it at length in press conferences lately about, you know, who are the type of profile of players that we can sign and when can we do it and how can we do it and all that sort of stuff. And but it's just, you know, the messaging from him specifically has been the same this whole season. This is a project, this is, you know, this is something we're building on. And like, yeah, he wants to win games, and of course he wants to win, he wants to win trophies and be successful, but like, he's seeing this as a project. And so like, if he's continuing to be happy and he's pleased with the direction of the project, then so am I.
Yeah, it's definitely a situation where the early wins, you know, going undefeated in the first 10, winning 8 of the first 10. And like, this is where like my world in soccer is also a little disconnected from the regular discourse, because, you know, I'm watching these games and like, there's, you know, there's an eye test and a numbers thing. Like, I don't think it was reasonable to watch those first 10 games and not see the problems.
Michael,
and not see that this team was giving up tons of good scoring chances. You know, so that's what I saw watching the games. That's more or less where the numbers were. Honestly, I felt like the defense was a little shakier even than the stats suggested. And, you know, so they came back down to earth, but like, that was what I saw watching the games anyhow. And, you know, again, like, just baseline it to where you were before the season. Like, don't baseline it to, like, the hottest run the season has. That's never a good idea. Every team runs hot for some period of time, and you just, if you baseline things to that, you'll be sad. Like, I don't know. Like, there are, like, who knows how many Manchester City fans out there, but are there, I talked to a few of them, and they get really, really sad about stuff. And it's like, ah.
Well, Manchester City,
no, they can't. That's not fair. You don't.
Well,
they don't
Manchester City fans, despite having like the most successful club in the world, are all like have the personality of a miserable old white British man in his like mid 60s who like saw his team get relegated, which in like some ways is, I guess, admirable that those guys have never lost their character like Chelsea fans did. But like, man, guys, live a little. I mean, I know you have to watch Pep struggle ball half the time, which is a lot less fun than it probably seems. But Jesus. Michael, can you tell, related to that, can you tell everyone the story about watching the first United game of the season at home with your son?
Oh, yeah. That was a really good time. Like,
but you saw it in person, to be clear.
Yeah, we go to London. We get to the game. You know, his first match, he's asking me, he's singing the songs. He's asking me what things are. And I'm like, shut the fuck up, kid. I'm calculating win probability here.
No, but when the game ended,
how much XG that chance was.
When the game was going on, there was a specific exchange that I'm thinking of that demonstrated that Sam knew ball, correct?
Wait.
I'm really enjoying watching Michael's face try to recall.
I bet there's a great story here. My brain is so fucking
dry. No, it was a story about him being really worried, and he was like, "Dad, we're winning by two. What are you so nervous about?" Or something
that's
like
right.
that.
Giving that's a, right. Yeah. That's right.
Oh, see, I'm dragging it out of you.
Oh my God. Yeah, because we kept conceding chances in that game. It was horrifying. And I'm like, come on, get control, get the ball. And he's like, "Daddy, we're winning 2-0.
Did you explain to him that's the most dangerous scoreline in football?
It is. That's an important lesson he needs to learn. Yeah. Anyway, we got there eventually. It is. I don't know. This game, I think, was like endemic of the way we've been playing lately, which I think, you know, it goes back to, I think, a lot of what you guys have been talking about, which is like, this is a work in progress. And there's going to be periods of the game when we're in the ascendancy. And, you know, I think between having watched Son and Harry Kane for the last, like, however many years, I think I certainly have a little bit of brain rot from that, where, like, I just expect, like, why aren't you just putting all your chances away? That's what attackers do, right? But between that and just, you know, some of the pieces, you know, we have some pieces that don't fit, and we have some pieces that just aren't, like, I think Madison in particular just isn't sort of clicking right now. But, you know, I think that was the kind of performance we had. And then you sort of combine that with our issues with managing set pieces. And it's, you know, it's a little start and stop. But I think the fundamentals are still really strong.
Yeah, it bounces back and forth. I mean, we beat the crap out of Luton. It took a last-minute winner. But, like, you know, that was a one-way match.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that, we have a bad match against Fulham. And then before that, we win 4-0 against Villa. And, like, you just got to kind of chuck them in the aggregate. Like, the team, when, like, against West Ham, I think the main thing that happened is that Son had an off game. Son was on the ball in a number of situations where I just thought he was going to get a shot off. And when you think Son's going to get a shot off, you're like, well, he might score it. He's the best finisher of his era. But he didn't. He only got 2 shots off. And when you consider how many touches he had in the penalty area, that is crazy. And yeah, six penalty area touches, 30 attacking third touches, and just the 2 shots. Like, just was off. And that's going to happen sometimes. Then, like, he's on in another game and we get lots of stuff going. Like, we have a superstar. He has a bad game. It's hard to make up for that. But like, if you sort of take, you go back 4 games, average pretty good. You go back 10, 15 games, average pretty good. But like, it continues to be pretty good. Like, the team has not been able to consistently play at a level that is competitive with the top 3 or at a level that is clearly better than anyone other than the top 3. clearly we remain in this muddle with teams like Villa. I mean, West Ham is there on the table. You know, teams like Brighton and Chelsea are kind of more there on underlying performance. Like, we're in the muddle. We're toward the top of that muddle. And being in that position means that some of the games are going to be bad. Like, that's our level. Like, that, and I think that, like, you know, and usually the way that works, it's not that every single game you're just somewhat better than the other team. It's inconsistent. Like, inconsistency is one of the hallmarks of a team that isn't quite there. And so you want it to always be the really good ones, but it's not going to always be the really good ones until we solve a couple of problems.
Yeah, and we've been having some interesting conversations in our writer's room this week with our friend Joel, who's been talking a lot about, you know, you look at our attacking maps, you look at, like, our sort of statistic, our underlying statistics, and, you know, again, accounting for everything you were just talking about there, but we look a lot closer to sort of, like, that top three in terms of what we're trying to do than like, sort of, you know, the teams under us, which is, you know, again, like, I yep. find no reason to not be encouraged. And I think... Yep. I think we're going to be far more ruthless in terms of upgrading our squad than a lot of people seem to think we are, because Ange generally seems like a nice guy, I guess. I don't know. But, like, I think Spurs are going to be fairly ruthless in terms of what they do this summer. Maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, that's just the impression I get.
I don't usually come into summers, like, A, thinking we got to throw some money around, and B, being terribly optimistic about Tottenham Hotspur's front office. And now, with the PSR regime in place and the front office that Tottenham have put together, like, we need to just go big. I think it's reasonably likely to happen.
I think we really need to push the boat out. And I think that's actually, you were talking about the muddle, Michael. And Brian, I'm interested what you think about this. Is, like, I think you compare, obviously there's sort of top three teams are kind of a cut above in the Premier League, but all the teams that are hovering around us from a futures perspective, I feel like our situation is much better than all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think Liverpool have a lot of interesting and good young players, but, like, there's a lot of stuff up in the air with them, I think, in terms of, like, who's coaching them next year? What does that look like even? I think you're right in terms of kind of the prospects we have in terms of not just the existing infrastructure at the club, the existing players, just, like, you know, we're financially healthier than a lot of these other than the state-backed clubs. But, like, of the non-state-backed clubs, we're significantly financially healthier. The stadium basically prints money for us. We're talking about, like, bringing in additional outside investment that is presumably to simply increase the capital and cash on hand so that we can then take big swings this summer. Like, that was, you know, that was the news that came out from our financial stuff that came out today. So, like, I don't see why we're not in the as good, if not better, position than some of the clubs that are ahead of us. I think, you know, the thing that's held us back for a long time is our wage structure. And I think that we've kind of indicated over the last few years our willingness to move away from that now that the financials the stadium is completed. We have the significantly favorable terms on the financing for all that sort of stuff. Like, we can afford to now take somebody and pay them, you know, 250,000-300,000 pounds a week or you know, whatever the number is. Like, if you wanted to take a swing at X big striker or the best available right wing or, you know, the best available midfielder, whatever the thing you wanted to do is, other than their desire to play somewhere else, there's not a reason that we can't do it. You know, like, financially, we can make it happen. You know, I have faith that, you know, Ange Postecoglou can talk to a guy on the phone and, like, he'll be in a Spurs shirt the next day. Like, so the only thing that's holding us back from, you know, signing, you know, whatever the big target guy is just, like, okay, well, is a Real Madrid or a PSG or, you know, something like that interested?
Yeah, I think the PSR context is really important, that the the fact that the Premier League is now imposing serious penalties for teams based on the losses that they run, and that because of that, even teams that are like on the edge of being okay are putting out statements about how they are working to comply with PSR. Like Aston Villa is like, they're close, but they are really doing everything to make sure they comply with PSR. Arsenal are in reasonably good shape, but they took Raya on loan because they wanted to make sure that the outlay of the costs lined up to keep them in line with PSR. Everyone is doing this. And like Chelsea are just going to flat out have to sell. Newcastle are going to have to sell to buy at best. And they're going to be very careful because it's a 3-year window. And so they had a lot of runway to spend money because of all the profits that Mike Ashley was taking off of the team. And as is because the 3-year window is a rolling window, as that moves forward, Newcastle's numbers look worse and worse. And the PIF, it seems, the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund that owns the team, doesn't want to fight. They are not focused on like trying to be the bad guys in the way that City were. They seem to be fine with following the rules and holding on to this club. And it's going to mean, I think, that there's a fair bit less money in the market this summer than there has been. You know, Nottingham Forest is not going to be able to spend. Everton's not going to be able to spend. Leicester City, they get promoted, they're not going to be able to spend. Like, all of those teams that, like, push the edges of it up, like, Spurs are going to be in a really, really favorable position. Not the only team in a favorable position, like, Arsenal is going to be a very, very, very favorable position. Not ideal. But like Spurs are now one of a pretty small number of teams in a favorable position in a market where they're going to be a bunch of forced sellers as well. I think it's a very, very good position to be in. And like, I don't know if Daniel Levy was going to run this club this way no matter what. The fact that PSR is happening and making everyone have to try to run their club the way that he did is like good fortune. But it's good fortune that you get for, like, you know, having a good business.
I think one of the real positive knock-on effects of Ange just really having a very successful first season at Spurs is I think this front office is going to back him to some extent. And that's why, I Michael, I'm kind of with you, and I'm probably talking myself into this, because, like, probably what's going to happen is we're going to try to, like, bilk Everton out of a midfielder or something. But, you know, if a... I don't know, Kvara, I don't know how to say his full name, but Kvara Donna out of Napoli, or...
Kvicha Kvaratskhelia?
Yeah, exactly. See, there you go. That's that, you know, because you have a neighbor who probably has a very similar name in Brooklyn like that. But you know, if he's on the market, if Nico Williams is on the market, you know,
there's
these
one
are guys
pronounce.
Like...
That's a good one for you.
Yeah. But you know... These guys who I'm not convinced Spurs are going to do it, but I think we got the capacity to do it. And I think especially with a manager that like everyone at the club loves, all the fans love, like, you know, I think we're more likely to do something like this summer. And I feel good about our position to do it. Now, you know, like I said, this is probably going to turn into us like buying Onana or whatever off of Everton. But, you know, it's like,
well, I think the point that Michael made about the money in the market is the key thing is like, cause you know, look, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, like the big PSG, like the big European teams are still going to be able to spend money. Manchester City. I mean, they're none of their stuff with the PSR is ever going to be resolved. I'm convinced, but like, you know, at some point they'll still be able to find a way to spend some money, you know, but it's just a matter of, you know, that the clubs right below that tier are now in a position where they have to be at least more careful about either structuring of the deals or just deciding like, we're not going to go after that guy. And, you know, before for Spurs, you know, realistically, you were targeting the guys that not only didn't get hit by the big European clubs, but that also like that next tier didn't necessarily vacuum up either. And so now you've kind of skipped ahead of those teams in that second tier to that's now you're at that level where those are the guys that you can look at. Like, you know, Mbappe's going to Real Madrid. regardless of whether Real Madrid has the money to pay for him, because like they'll figure it out and he's not going to go anywhere else, you know. And the same thing with any other big superstars in Europe that are going to move. Like, but like you said, like whether it's a Nico Williams from Athletic, whether it's, you know, someone else in that similar range, they're within the realm of possibility for us.
Yeah, assuming the, you know, other teams interest, you know, that an Arsenal's not hot to trot on them or whatever. But yeah,
I'm also excited about the idea of just going for Boniface, like just get a superstar striker.
Yeah, I would love to do that, man. I mean, I would love to do that.
Like, oh, how are we going to replace Harry Kane? Well, let's get the best damn striker on the market. I don't know.
That would be incredible if we could pull that off. I would feel, I don't know. I'm very optimistic. And even like if we go maybe a tier under that, which is not what I'd like us to do, but you know, that's still like, there's still ways. I think like if we're not going to do that, if we're not going to go for that big ticket item, which I think Spurs really ought to do, and I'm kind of convinced between the stadium and the market that we're going to do, but even if we don't, there's still ways to really improve this team. Because like you were saying, Michael, the market's going to be so weak. I think we're going to be able to really take advantage of teams as long as we don't like play too many games like we did with Aston Villa and Grealish all those years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think that like, you know, if we sort of go over these matches and the things that are a problem, you know, I think it's pretty clear where the issues are. I think there's like three things. I think it is clear that we are getting fewer good chances out of the amount of time we spend in and around the penalty area. And we need people who are just somewhat better at making something happen individually when the team gets us there. We lose the ball too much in early buildup, and we need someone at the back, probably at the six, but there's a lot of different ways to do it, who's a really, really good, safe but progressive possession passer. Those are hard to find, especially people who can do that and meet Ange's athletic requirements for a player. That's really, really hard. That's why Pep and Arteta and everyone has been spending so much money on these sorts of players, because it's hard to find that guy. But I think we need someone like that to help stop like the bleeding at the back that comes from the turnovers. And then we need to fix set pieces. And I think that comes down to a coach. And probably like that's where I think a little bit about like a Boniface kind of signing. You get a big guy who can work in the air. I think that is that part of our problem is that we're not coaching set pieces like at all, as far as I can tell. And like Ange should fix that. And part of the problem is we need, it's like that's where I sort of look at where we need to target. And like it seems like it also seems like the team wants to target there. Doesn't seem like this is like I'm like up out on a limb here.
Yeah, well, weirdly, I think we're missing Harry Kane on set-piece defense, which is like a strange thing to say, but neither of our center backs can really jump, which is weird considering that like Romero is like a psychotic
jump?
Murderer.
I don't get it. Like Christian Romero, a little bit short for a center back, not incredibly athletic, not so weird. Van de Ven has the craziest burst. Like, it's the same muscles. Somebody like get him like a plyometric consultant or something.
Lucas Moura was like 5 foot whatever, and he was a great like header of the ball. Like I don't know,
guys, like the wind.
Yeah, yeah, but like I don't know. Van de Ven might just be like, you know, his like good. He might be too. He might have too many good fundamentals of basketball to like, you know, also, you know, be able to get up. I don't know.
Yeah. No. All winter. All summer. You send him home. Get him on a basketball team and teach him to rebound. That's all you want to do. Like, all weekend, all summer, Mickey, you're rebounding. You're learning where the ball is going. You're jumping and getting it.
I think to Michael's first point there about the individual talent in and around the box, and just to, I don't know, maybe discuss the games that we did play recently a little bit.
No. Talk about the transfer window is much more fun.
But that was definitely one of my frustrations in watching the Luton game specifically, the ball was so often come to one of our midfielders. Usually it was Sarr, kind of like right at the top of the box. And he was so content to like hold it and wait to lay it off to either Porro going outside of him or Kulusevski going down the wing, as opposed to just taking a touch and having a shot, or like moving into the middle and seeing what that did to the defense, and then if somebody was making a run that was unmarked. And it was, you know, look, I love Sarr. I think he's great. I think he does a lot of good things that make the system work and everything. But it was very frustrating in that moment where you just like, oh, if you just had a guy that was just a little more selfish, a guy who was just like, nah, fuck it, I'm scoring here. Like, and I don't know if that's a Connor Gallagher type player or who that guy is, but just someone that gets the ball at the top of the 18 and is like, no, I can do this from here. I don't need to lay it off, or, you know, and we don't really have that person anymore in the same way that we had Harry Kane, who would just come into a game and just take it by the scruff of the neck. Like, if X wasn't working, Harry Kane was dropping deep to get on the ball and make a thing happen. Or Harry Kane was demanding the ball in the penalty area, and then he was just going to go to work and, you know, turn to somebody and make it happen. And we have a lot of guys who, you know, Son's a good finisher and everything, but he's very reliant on the supply of the ball, or, you know, getting in behind or whatever. He's not creating on his own. He requires either space or something else to allow him to do the things that he does. And you know, it's frustrating in especially those games against those worse oppositions where they're going to pack it in and they're going to sit behind the ball. And, you know, just having one or two guys on this team that could just go out there and create something on the ball, whether it was creating a shot or creating a pass, would make a huge difference to what we're seeing here. Like, even just having, you know, a winger that was able to take somebody on the dribble against a set defense would be great. We've got fast guys that can run down the flank, and that's wonderful, but like, can any of them beat a man from both of, you know, a standing start? Like, none of them really do that.
Yeah, we against West Ham, we had 41 touches in the penalty area and only got away 13 shots. Like, the ratio of touches in the penalty area to shots is usually closer to 2-1, and we were well over 3-1. Like, and this just happens a lot.
I think there is, I mean, I think it has a lot to do with the players that we have, but there is, it seems to be Ange really wants shots coming from specific areas or specific players. Because, I mean, there was a period, I can't remember when the match this was, but there was a period where they just kept moving the ball around, and I just remember thinking, like, someone fucking shoot it. Like, it was just, there was like three or four passes where, like, no one had it, was in a great position to shoot. But, like, at this point in the match, like, I mean, it was certainly late enough in the match where it's like, someone fucking try something, like, just to make it happen.
And the ability to just get that body position, get, like, that extra foot of space, all of those things are, you know, that's just what better players do, I think. And, like, we're getting so much out of some very limited players. I'd be really interested to see if you just get guys in with a more well-rounded skill set.
Well, and it's funny because I feel like I'm looking at this team and it's like, God, we're really building a good foundation of a really good team right now. Because it's like, I don't want Timo Werner to be our first choice. He's a great second choice to have on your front line. You know, Brennan Johnson, maybe not right now who you want your first choice, but, you know, the progress this year has been very impressive. Like, so either he's going to develop into a first choice option or he's going to be a great second choice. You know, Richarlison's Son, I think, is still a, assuming they're both healthy, a very good, those are two very good options to have as your center forward. But, you know, you'd like someone a little more, I mean, I don't know, maybe we're all spoiled by Kane, who could do fucking everything but run fast. You know, but you're so close to getting a lot of it. But like you said, it's like, we need those guys who can get in that position who can shoot, which Son usually does. I mean, I think that's, I know there's been a lot of discussion on Spurs Twitter about, like, you know, I know the extra inches talked about it a lot, how, like, Son doesn't do enough, but I don't necessarily buy into that, because I understand the idea is he's not bringing people into play or, you know, doing some of those things that Kane used to do. But the point is, generally speaking, he's scoring a lot of goals or even getting some assists. And really, like, if you've got a forward who's as productive as Son this year, I think, like, you're doing pretty good, like, for yourself.
I really struggle to see, like, your forward's got 15 and 8, and he works on defense. Like, what? I don't.
Yeah, like I'd like him to be better in the air. Like I'd like him to be better in the air, but like you know, I'd also like a solid gold toilet. So you know, like what's the you know?
Yeah. I mean, the complaint about him is he doesn't have 25 and 10 as opposed to you know 15 and 8.
Like, no, I think that's something to overlook.
I think that like, the complaint is, as I understand it, that like he's not a hold up center forward.
Yes,
he's
yes.
not the progressive outlet that you get the ball to and then he lays it off. Instead, we build up the wings.
Yeah.
But we've but talked about this.
Ange wants it. Ange yes. does not want a center forward.
This is what he did at Celtic. For. I don't want my center forward taking a lot of touches. I want them fucking taking a lot of shots. And generally, that's what someone does. And you can even tell me, like, I don't know this is the case. It's West Ham, which, like, defends well, defends deep pretty well. Because, Jesus Christ, if there's anything David Moyes can do, it's that. And it was wet. It was very... like ugly weather game. It might be as simple as that as to why Son wasn't getting the ball out quicker. It might be he just had an off day. I don't know. I would like to, you know, in theory, get a more complete forward than Richarlison to pair with Son, but like, you know, we were talking about how hard it is to find a deep lying six who can pass the ball, and like, you know, I mean, finding a more complete forward than Richarlison is easier said than done, I think. You know, obviously, I think Richarlison's health, you know, his ability to stay healthy is a bit more of an issue. So I'm not going to turn up my nose if we can say, get that guy out of Leverkusen. But short of that, like, you know, we're well set up in a lot of ways. It's just I think that goes back to what I think you were saying, Michael, about the summer window is like we have a lot of capacity. The market's really well set up for us. Let's fucking do something and really. You know, get like an A+ upgrade on some of these guys because it's like a good foundation right now. But you need that guy to sort of put us over the top.
Yeah.
Michael, what do you think of? I'm curious because we've talked this to death on this podcast, but we haven't talked to you about it in a while. What do you think of where Brennan Johnson is right now? Because he's been, especially amongst our more numbers-focused people, he's been the source of a lot of conversations here. But he's turned into a fairly productive player for Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a whole thing set up. I'm talking about it on the podcast tomorrow, probably. But like, it's so weird because you know he's got 5 and 7. His XG would suggest instead he should have 7 and 5. Like, it's not an XG story. It's not, like, a finishing story. Like, he's got 7 and 5 in limited minutes because he's really getting those scoring chances. And that's, you know, he had 8 and 3 last season in a full season. He played some 30-plus 90s, and he had 8 and 3. Like, you know, again, like, I'm not talking about expected goals here. I'm not talking about all kinds of nerdy stuff. Like, he didn't produce in a really basic way. And now suddenly he does. And at the same time, like all of the other stuff that was also lacking in his game, you know, he doesn't do much ball progression. He's not a very good primary outlet. When he's in the game, we got to move it through the guy in the other wing. It's Werner or... And he can't beat a man for the life of him. Like, he tries. He's got like a 33% career take on like percentage. It's not even that he doesn't try. He does try. He can't do it. And he runs to the back post or he runs to the baseline and plays the ball across the face of goal. And those two things are such incredibly valuable actions that the aggregate is really good. And I think it's a really interesting question. You know, part of it is like there's a lot of high XG per shot here going on. But even if you take a lot of that air out, even if you say, you know, you probably aren't going to like get a tap in from 4 yards because you ran to that area the way he did against West Ham. But still, like, he's getting more shots and he's getting shots from very close range and he's assisting shots from very close range. And so. Is there something peculiar about him that Ange or our scouts or our data people identified that there are skills that turn you into this? You take the skills that didn't work outside the penalty area and still don't work outside the penalty area. He's still, I think, pretty clearly a negative player outside the penalty area. But it doesn't matter because of what he's producing in the penalty area. I'm like, why? How could that? Like, it is very weird. This does not happen with any regular. This is not like, you know, oh, Brandon Johnson, yet another player unlocked into a star attacker from having done nothing. Like, this is not a common story. But I think we're like, you know, we got 1590s, and like, you keep seeing it. We see him do just these two actions. So he does them with some consistency, and the production is very real. I'm flummoxed.
much like any exposure to the Welsh language, you are flummoxed by a Welsh winger. So, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously don't have any additional numbers insight into it, but like, you know, I think over the past month and a half, certainly he's shown a much higher level of comfort with what he's asked to do in his role in this team. And, you know, my eye test tells me the same thing that Michael says, like when we're not in the penalty area, when we're not in possession, he's not doing much of anything. Like he's not helping him build up. But like if he gets on the end of it, once it's in the penalty area, like he's making stuff happen. I mean, he makes the equalizer happen in the Luton game. He scores the opener in the West Ham game. Like he's doing stuff. And I mean,
well, you saw him score a winner in the Brighton game.
Yeah,
so.
I saw him. One of my favorite Spurs moments, like in person, like much better than the last Spurs game I saw in person, where Dele Alli got sent off and we got eliminated from the Europa League. But like, you know, he's doing the thing. Like, if we're talking about what Ange wants his wingers to do, and I still don't think we're entirely clear on what, in an ideal world, those guys are supposed to do. But like, with the guys that we have, this is what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to get the ball and play it across, and then hopefully the guy on the other wing is there to tap it in, or Son is there to tap it in, and it works great and it looks pretty. And that's happening. And I mean, he might have more assists if it's not Timo Werner on the opposite wing. Like, you know, especially in that Luton game, like, I don't know, we should have had 4 or 5 just on balls that he played across. Like, honestly, their right back, he probably should have had 2 or 3 own goals. You know, the way Johnson was kind of playing the ball across there at the end. So like, I don't know. I'm annoyed by the price tag still, I guess, but like for the age profile, for what we've actually kind of gotten in terms of, you know, a super sub and the minutes and the role he's fulfilling, like, all right, it's fine. Like, let's see if he can add some other stuff to his game. He's still only like, what is he, 22, 21? Like,
yeah,
he's not even close to getting to, you know, the peak age. Like, it's still theoretically, we should be improving still. So I'm interested.
What I think is interesting about Johnson, you sort of touched on a little bit there, Brian, and I don't have any numbers to back this up, I'm basing this off sort of an eye test, and I could be entirely wrong, but it seems to me his, I don't know about production, the quality of play has picked up since Werner joined the team. And I don't know if that is a product of Johnson just more comfortable in the way he's being used or what. It seems to me like having a higher quality sort of like guy on the other side of the pitch, at least in terms of like we all know Werner is like a comical finisher, but like he's good at a lot of other stuff. So between like Werner creating for him and him creating for Werner, like I feel like the play has improved. So like, especially if we go get a dude on the left, which I'm not sure that's what we're going to target this offseason, but you know, I'm kind of curious to see what kind of product that would have. Do you guys have any thoughts on how Johnson seems to be more effective as a sub? Because I don't fully understand that. I mean, I understand the idea of him running at tired legs, but a lot of this is happening pretty early in the second half, or at least sometimes it's happening early in the second half. And it's not like they got tired legs coming out of halftime. I mean, do you guys have any theories on, I mean, is it just less pressure? Is it more him like disrupting sort of a set game plan? Like, I mean, why does he seem to be more effective as a second half player than a starter?
I mean, I think it's any number of things. I think probably from my own limited experience playing this sport, you know, I would say that one of the difficult things is when you have somebody lined up across from you like Dejan Kulusevski, who is doing a different thing. And then all of a sudden you have to adjust, whether you're tired or not. You just have to adjust to a guy that's doing a different thing in a different way and doing it also at a different speed. It's difficult, right? Like you get into the pattern of the game. You get into, okay, yep. Kulusevski's going to go around the corner. He's going to cross. He's going to da 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 da, or he's going to try to cut inside. He's going to do this, like whatever. And then Johnson comes and you have to go, okay, no, if he gets level with me, he's past me. And like Michael said, he's not necessarily great at take-ons, but like if he's just running in behind you, he doesn't have to take you on. And so then you have to adjust the way you're playing. And I think, you know, one thing we all know about football is like on-the-fly adjustments are not the easiest thing in the world. This isn't basketball. You can't call a timeout and be like, hey, all right, you know, this is they put in all their shooters, so like we got to make sure we close down off of this and we got to hedge all the screens and blah, 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 blah. Like, you're just yelling at these guys from the side of the pitch, and then you're relying on them to have paid attention in, you know, whatever video sessions you did, or, you know, their own actual experience with these players to be able to adjust on their own. And when you're playing a team like a Luton or, you know, some of these other teams lower down the table, you have guys out there that are just less talented and then less able to change up how they're doing things. And I think, you know, Michael can probably tell us that's exactly what sub effects are designed to measure and all that sort of stuff. But like, I think that's more of it than anything else. It's just like, not tired legs necessarily, just like, you just got to do something different when you put him out there.
Yeah, I buy that. He's, you know, about as dissimilar as a player could be from Dejan Kulusevski.
Yes, yes. And you know, you combine that with he's clearly got good instincts in the box. So, you know, it creates problems. Yeah, so before we leave, Michael, I think we have a few important questions for you now that you're here. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, now that Eric Dyer isn't on Spurs anymore, you know, we're wondering who's running Movie Club. Alfie Whiteman is clearly staking a claim with his art film critiques. I think Vicario is probably trying to show people movies he thinks are very art filmy, but aren't. But who do you think is running the sort of Spurs Movie Club at the moment now that Eric Dyer is, you know, in Germany?
Yeah, I mean, I think that clearly, like, Whiteman is the one who would be showing good films to his friends, Harry and Matt, who hate them. And I think that I gotta think that James Madison has the worst taste in movies ever and would be like a really fun guy for Alfie Whiteman to show art films to.
Yeah. Now, Madison just imagine. Wants to watch the Harry Potter movies. That's all he wants to see. Exactly. He's like, listen, you know, I was promised that there'd be magic in this movie, and I don't understand magic realism, but I don't like this.
I mean, like, you know, the early scenes with the Dursleys, where it's the world that we live in, and then magic intercedes into it, but you have to live with that. Now imagine that, but set in an unnamed South American country, and it covers a whole century.
Yeah. He's just really into Gabriel Garcia Marquez. It's just like, he's like, no, you have to understand.
No, I'm trying to imagine like Alfie Whiteman showing like Zone of Interest to the team, and just like Vicario, like just checking his phone the whole time. You're like, oh yeah, okay, yeah. No,
they would
no,
be so bored.
Yeah, that's
when
good,
is Venom
yeah.
in this movie? Like when does
so you say I got to pay attention to what's on the other side of the fence? Is it Venom? Is Venom on the other side of the fence? Is a symbiote over there? No.
They live next to Hogwarts?
Is it magic? Is that what they're making on the other side of that wall? Oh, this is the worst conversation we could have had about Zone of Interest on this. Yeah, I'm trying to imagine like who else on Spurs. Like, I mean, Alfie Whiteman, obviously. I feel like Vicario is the kind of guy who would like just be very enthusiastic about showing movies like Venom to his teammates, like very bad movies, like, you know, like he's shown them, well, it's not a bad movie, but he's shown them like John Wick, like 20 times because he thinks that's Citizen Kane. I'm trying to imagine like who else on the team would be like into movie nights or at least be targeted for movie nights. And I'm not like, I don't know, like nothing quite rises to the level of like Harry Kane being shown like The Bicycle Thief in my head. But, you know, I'm sure like Madison, like trying to talk to Alfie Whiteman about the Harry Potter movies, like that's a close second. So.
Yeah. I mean, do you think like Sun shows them like selections of like Korean cinema?
Absolutely not.
No, you don't think like him and Papsar aren't getting together and he's like, all right, now we're going to watch this Korean movie. And Papsar's like, yeah, whatever, man.
Well, I think Papsar would be like, yeah, whatever, man. I think the movie that Son would show them are home movies his dad filmed of him shooting and him missing his shots and him being shamed for it. And which, you know, is an art film of a certain caliber, I suppose.
Jesus. Yeah. Well, it's another option, I suppose.
Yeah. Brian, I have a question for you, actually. Like, who do you think on Spurs is selling insurance? Because I know this is a passion of yours.
Selling insurance?
Yeah.
Well, like in South Florida, like Dragushin would definitely offer you yacht insurance. Like he's just very much a guy that's like wandering around the boat shows here in South Florida. And it's just like, hey, you know.
Is this actual yacht insurance or is this like a criminal scheme?
Well, I mean, it depends on who do you mean like that the scheme is
okay,
for?
Okay, let me
like,
rephrase.
A scheme for
is there,
him?
Is there an extra legal entity involved in this?
Always. It's insurance. Okay. There's always an extra legal entity involved. Yeah, so it's him or I think who else? I guess the only other person that really gives you like kind of salesman, that gives me salesman vibes is obviously Ange. And like, just, you know, he's just like avuncular and chatty. And you're like, you walk out of there and all of a sudden you've bundled all your insurance with his weird fly by night company that you're like, wait, where are you guys from again? He's like, Australia. And you're like, well, are you even allowed to do that here? He's like, we'll find out. that's the vibe that not to say that, you know, Ange isn't amazing, but he does have that salesman-y vibe.
He does have like I feel like he would put me into an Eastern European car against my better judgment, you know?
Yeah,
like I feel like that's a thing that would happen.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap it up, fellas. Thanks for sort of discussing the West Ham game with us. Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
All right, well, you can read my newsletter Expecting Goals at expectinggoals.com. there's a new one coming next week. And you can listen to my podcast, The Double Pivot, at patreon.com/doublepivot. You can go to brooklyncan'twait.com and donate to support our candidates for state committee, our campaign to change the Democratic Party in Brooklyn, to build the Democratic Party that can actually be the thing we want it to be. All these important things. Some of these listeners are English. Don't donate. If you're English, that's against the law. Please. Don't do that.
Unless you live in a houseboat, in which case, contact Michael and ask for some advice. Brian, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That is Brian with a Y.
Find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. You can find me on Blue Sky at just plain old Skipjack, although unless you're yelling at me about, I don't know, how my takes aren't sufficiently woke, I don't think you're going to be on Blue Sky. You can find our podcast at WDR Podcast. That's WDR as Wheeler Dealer Radio. For Michael, for Brian, for Ben, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs, and enjoy your lunch.